floodgates. It's time to welcome the river. The river of life.
You are listening to the Go Health Podcast. The Go Health Podcast seeks to explore stories, how people have found healing, and how we can learn from them, from their stories of human flourishing, some ordinary, some extraordinary. I'm Gillian Strain, and I run the Guild of Health and St. Raphael. In this episode of the Go Health Podcast, I'm chatting with Peter Walker, who's artist in residence at Lichfield Cathedral. Peter is famous for his light shows and his sculptures, so looking at stories of art, of creation, and of healing.
Blessings flow through our lives.
Peter, thank you so much for agreeing to speak on our Go Health Podcast. So how has lockdown been for you?
I guess I've tried to use it as a period of adjustment. And as an artist, it's been a period in I've still got my artwork, and I've not had to shy away from production, which is really, really beneficial as an artist. And it hasn't stopped me from what I do as a daily job.
Yes, of course. So you're the artist in residence at Lichfield Cathedral. How did you get that job? How did you hear about it? And why were you attracted to doing it?
I was born and grew up in the area, and then left to go and become an artist. And after having quite a successful art career, I decided with my wife, Catherine, to start doing projects in the area. So we were travelling back to the area to do projects. Eventually, I was introduced to the Dean of Lichfield, Adrian Dorber. After about 3 hours of a meeting, we pretty much came up with a scheme to work together, which was 5 years of creating contemporary artwork and the production of a statue of St. Chad. So the cathedral had never had a resident anything, except for canons, obviously, but never had anything creative. They'd had artworks here before. And then suddenly this opportunity came up, so we moved back to Lichfield, we moved on to the Close, we became part of the community, and we've had quite a journey, quite a ride over the last sort of 4 years. I've got about another 18 months left of the official relationship, and it includes both the artist in residence, but I'm also the artistic director, so that includes a lot of sort of background programming for the cathedral, curation, and contemporizing of the way that we do certain things through the year.
Oh, and what works well, if a cathedral's function is to be, I don't know, a centre for the diocese, a centre of worship, a focus for the community, both for the people who worship God there and for those on maybe on the edges, what do you consider works well in terms of art and a building like the cathedral? And how do you measure it?
I think what I think doesn't work well is just looking at a building and saying how it is now must be preserved forever in that one state. Because that's saying, actually, when you come to a place like Lichfield, it's saying we must just revere Victoriana. We must look at this one vision of what the world should be. And everyone who comes here must see that and see that as the representation of what this place is about. And we look at the change of art since even the start of the 21st century. But if we go back a further 100 years to the start of the big change in the arts, where people didn't have to go to studios to work. They didn't have to go through particular ways of working or the academy. You could become an artist from different backgrounds. We start to see there are different styles and there's different messages and different sentiments can be expressed. So what I think cathedrals and churches have the ability to do is what they did originally, which was actually create stories and messages and convey that in different ways to people who are visiting these spaces. So by using contemporary methods, by using technology, by using different means of curation that aren't just here's a picture and this is what it's about, we've managed to come up with lots of different ideas of engaging people visually, stimulating emotions, playing around with the space through light and dark in many cases, taking people on different journeys and emotional journeys around the space. And in the sense of what the building's about, bringing the Gospels to life in different ways. So last year we looked at the Gospel of John, for instance, and we did a project all around space, and we were looking at Abraham and the stars in the sky, and we did these big projects about walking on the moon, and it really just puts you in the context of where people would have been several hundreds, thousands of years ago, people would have been in a different way of looking at the world and the universe. We're in a slightly more advanced way only because we've discovered more. So actually we can express that through art, and art is the perfect mechanism to do so.
It seems to me there's a clash between invitation, experience and interpretation, and sometimes what people think about the church mm-hmm. as an authority.
Yeah.
And the building itself, as all cathedrals, it's big, it's fancy, it's scary, it's got doors you've got to get through,
Yeah. You've
got stewards you've got to get past, mm-hmm. And then you're told what this building is about. So there seems to be a bit of a clash there between what you're bringing, what you're helping the cathedral offer, mm-hmm. and what many people feel about buildings like this. I wonder how you help people through that process, or have you found it to be a clash when you're offering spaces, offering cathedrals this way of helping them to engage?
We work with a number of cathedrals now, taking work around, and I guess the first conversations, there's perhaps a slight nervousness around what it might mean, because it is different. It's a completely different approach. I would say that the sort of the model that we've developed here now, I know there's quite a lot of other places adopting that way. They don't work in exactly the same way as us, but they're adopting these mechanisms. I am not a natural. I haven't gone to church every Sunday for my life. I'm not a natural churchgoer in that sense. So I guess I'm a bit of an outsider in some ways, and I am that person who is that door open for me. And when I was younger in Lichfield, the doors were closed. They felt closed. They were, they're big, thick wooden doors. They're closed for certain times of the day. The services, when you've got to be quiet, these are expectations. Actually, when you've lived and you've worked in these places, none of what you learn is true. So actually, they are open spaces. They're there for everyone. The nave of a cathedral is still a nave, as it always was in many sense, where it's for people to gather and congregate. Some cathedrals charge entry, which I guess changes how we see it as an attraction to come, and you've paid for an experience, so you expect to get something from it. But actually, I think what I learned about these places, even in today's society, they're places of all faiths and none. I think there's a great opportunity for people to re-experience something that we miss by coming to, especially to cathedrals, something that we miss in everyday life, and that we've been miseducated in what these places are about. There is a real opportunity for these places to be really comfortable places for people to come and express themselves, and express themselves through either how the place feels on a daily basis, which can be quite overwhelming, just walking into a building that's 800 years old, that still carries a weight of, you can still feel the people who built this place like Lichfield Cathedral, and you can't hear the footsteps, but the footsteps of millions of people who walked through there in front of you. So that there's a greatness just about the space that you can be overwhelmed in. But I think it's really important that as we move forward, see, sometimes we need to put doors in these walls and allow people to come through into spaces that feel as though they're exclusive. And I think that will change, and I'm hoping actually that something like the period of time we're living through is not a reason to shut the doors. Mm. It's a reason to throw them open and celebrate and invite more people in.
There was an incident in Lichfield I heard about before we moved here. The day that the doors shut, mm-hmm. A local person stood in front of the cathedral and shouted, "Betrayal."
Yes.
And I find that I wasn't here, and I find that a deeply moving story. Mm-hmm. I think that man sounded a bit prophetic to me. Yeah. Something that had gone on. Because the building and whatever goes on inside, and your work as an artist, it provides something. I just wonder if we can get further into what you said just there about art in cathedrals being an opportunity to make new doors, people to come in. What is it possible to summarize the reason people come? Like, what is the need within people that you, with your art or the building in general, is somehow satisfying?
Well, I don't think we can't throw everyone into one sort of homogenous group and say this is why they come. I think there are multiple reasons. We've got, for instance, when I'm in Europe and my wife and I, we go on European holidays, you always go to a cathedral. Mm. It's one of the key things. Where do we, there's a cathedral, there's a castle, you go to all of these places, you're drawn to them because they are the markers of the history of that place. So you naturally go to them. And I think that audience is looking for heritage, it's looking to fill its time. It's just looking for something to do. And that audience also has a degree of investigation. They want to find something out about a place. And a big part of our audience is tourists. So I think anywhere could put on an exhibition and that audience would engage with it. In many respects, I think they're probably the easiest people to. So that audience is a set audience. The harder audience to get through is the audience that we've had a lot of successful projects, is the local audience that is not a natural cathedral or church audience. I actually think there still remains quite a high reverence for the church in the wider community, and I think we've experienced that through a lot of the projects. And I think people sometimes need a positive excuse. So one of the first projects that we did, the dean knew that I do Sonny Lumiere and light shows. It was Christmas 2015, I think, and we said, it's quite a dark building in the front of Lichfield Cathedral. So it's not like a Leon where it's white and you can put light on it and it's quite easy to illuminate. It's quite dark. So we said, let's just do two nights of testing. And we didn't advertise it. And over those two nights, I think by the second night, the cathedral realised they had to run inside and get buckets to get all the donations because we had about 10,000 people turn up.
Wow.
And it was just a magnet. And actually, what we were showing, we were showing a short presentation, a short light show, which pretty much told the nativity. And that's, of course, that's a story that nearly everyone learns, and people of all faiths will learn that in some way as well. So we found actually that there's people from all different backgrounds turning up. One, because it's such a spectacle of seeing an immovable object come to life. But two, I think it just connected. It's Christmas. They wanted. And we've actually used that project to positively engage with, I think, about 120,000 people now over about 4 or 5 years. And it's really quite profound, the reaction we get. And we know that because when we do these projects, we're not just doing them at their events. We gather data. My wife's an anthropologist and she does interviews and talks to people. But we also allow people the opportunity to express themselves.
Mm.
We don't say their prayers, but we put... we either put a star out or we'll put sometimes we've had doves and we've had angels for people to write prayers on, or just wishes or messages.
Mm.
And at that point, we take people through a journey. And just towards the end, just before the last thing that they will see, they're given this opportunity to express themselves or to light a candle.
Mm.
And at that point, I'd say about 80% of everyone who walks through engages in those two elements of writing something or lighting a candle. And at that point, I think they're starting to express something beyond just coming to an event. And I think that's because the place offers that.
Yeah.
And when I talk to the dean about it, that is not the artwork. The artwork is in many respects, it's like telling a story. It's like watching a film. The end result comes because they're in this place.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. It started with, you know, this is a tourist event, why don't you come along? And people are then drawn naturally into it's not, you're not advertising, come and have an experience and find some sense of deep belonging. You're you know, putting stuff on and it happens naturally.
Yes.
And that invitation to experience, that sounds to me very much like a healing process people are going on. There's something about the telling of the presentation of the art. So often in the Guild we talk about, you know, holy stories or sacramental stories. You know, when we tell our stories of suffering, people will then respond by telling their stories. And somehow in the telling, it becomes healing, a healing moment, and to everyone that's involved. And I wonder to what extent your art is healing for people who experience it.
I think the idea of art has been healing is one that makes sense. I think art has been always developed by humans over time to actually help us in different ways.
Mm.
There's been periods of times, and actually the front of Lichfield Cathedral has hundreds of saints and kings presented on the front. That type of art is not necessarily there to heal. I think that type of art is to speak and to say and to tell. It's to tell of the past and to tell what this building is about. There are other types of art which can be quite cathartic. And I remember when I was younger, I wanted to be a poet first, and then I was a musician. And about the age of 18, 19, I went to the National and I saw Van Gogh's Sunflowers.
Yeah.
And it just opened something up to me, because everything, generally when you live in the Midlands, most of the art that you see is photographs in books.
Yeah.
There's very, you know, it's very rare that you'll see original artwork unless you can get to travel. And I couldn't get anywhere to travel. So except for a beautiful gallery in Warsaw, which used to have Paul Gauguin and Epstein sculptures. But to go and see a Van Gogh, it was a real big moment in my life to see somebody else's life actually captured in paint. They were in that painting. Mm. Whereas a lot of what I'd seen previously, it didn't feel like that. So there was a great sense to me that you can work, as an artist, you can work to present an idea, or you can present a sentiment, or you can present an emotion from yourself. So you can do lots of different ways of expressing things. In the same way, sometimes music tells a story, but sometimes it can just offer you a way into why are so many songs about breakups? You know, why are so many songs about heartache? Why are so many songs about love or relationships? It's because actually they are either the individual expressing that or opening a door, as we said before, we're talking about opening doors. They're opening a door for somebody else to express themselves through the artwork. So I think when it comes to something like healing, I think a couple of examples I have is what we did a project called Imagine Peace. It's quite hard to explain how we do indoor sonilumia, but essentially if you imagine the inside of a cathedral, the whole interior is lit with multiple sound pieces going on, and it's really quite overwhelming at times. And the idea of Imagine Peace, really, the dean at the end of, in 2018, asked me to take the soldiers home 100 years on. So we did a piece in the nave, which was almost this journey from the battlefield to wherever it might be. So there's almost this journey through poppy petals blowing around, doves flying, and then almost this like beautiful white sky emerging inside, and just really, really quite moving. But one of the areas that I wanted to create, because I knew it would have a different emotion, was to do something around, Tracy Emin had done The Unmade Bed. It's one of her most famous works. And I actually think that is a really healing work. Mm. I think it's a healing work because that she's expressed her life through art. And a lot of people don't like it. And I think that's because it says something to you. It makes you, you know, if that Van Gogh did his bed as well, then that's a really beautiful painting. The emptiness of his life was a bed and a chair. And also when you go to the institution where he was for his health later on in Provence, and you go and see that room that he was in, it's really quite, so even though there were different rooms, one was in his yellow house and the other was in the institution, they're completely different rooms. There's just a sense of the bed being quite an important element in life. So we did a made bed, which was before the chaos, and then next to that, so you couldn't sit on that, it was just this beautiful bed, just made with two lights on, like the most perfect bed that you will go and sleep in. So almost a counter. And then next to that, there was a bed which was to do with John Lennon's Bed In with Yoko Ono. And we just let people sit on there and pick up pillows with a word on, which were things like faith, hope, imagine, peace, and a few others. And then behind it, we had just a cloud. So it was just to create this dream space. There was a chap who was working here, on an icon for the cathedral, who came and really always joyous. And he came and he sat on the bed and he cried. And this was a story that one of the guides who was working there said he came up to him and said, actually, he was bombed when he was younger. He was in a bombing incident. And this is the first time it had opened it up for him.
Wow.
So it reminded me of this. And then we had people in their 70s and 80s saying, when I was a child, I was in London. And this is the first time I've been able to really connect just by sitting down in a cathedral on a bed. And I tell you what, the debate about whether I could put beds in a cathedral, you know, what will people do? What's going to happen? And then there was another lady who lost her husband 3 years before. And she sat on there with her two daughters, smiling at first, picking up, and then she just broke. Oh. And she said, this is the first time I've cried. I didn't cry at the funeral. I've not cried in front of my daughters. And she just was thanking us and thanking the volunteers. This has opened the door. And I think what people often get confused in is that art can be more and is more than the picture that you have on the wall at home and the picture that you go into a gallery or you see in, you know, Habitat or in the supermarket in the print. Art is a much broader subject that actually cuts into nearly everything we do in daily life. And the practitioners of art are not the crazy bohemian Parisian, you know, living in the garrets necessarily that we think that the world paints that picture of. The reality of artists is actually that they're individuals who fall into a career because, one, it's natural to them. Sometimes it's worked at, but they are trying to express things from themselves to others. And I think if you're lucky enough then to engage that in a place like a cathedral or just in a white wall gallery, you can open up healing experiences through that. It won't necessarily be the intention of the work, but it doesn't mean... And if I can just... One more experience. My first ever exhibition in Cornwall, where we were living for a while, I've got a piece called the Icarus, and it's a bronze sculpture, 30 centimetres, and that was an exhibition where the first exhibition didn't sell anything. Everything was far too expensive. And everyone goes to Cornwall to buy pictures of boats and landscapes, and I'm doing mythological characters and some really quite sort of dark, challenging artwork. But we had this great private view, and then just the curator came up to me and said, would you just go and talk to the lady over there? She wants to talk about the piece of work. So I went over and I was talking to her, and I was very shy then. I'd never have spoken like this. And she just turned around and said to me, that piece of work is just, I want to tell you, you're the only other person beyond my husband, that it reminds me that I was abused as a child. And I want to tell you that because it's actually, now I feel by looking at that sculpture, it's let it go.
Wow.
And she said, I just feel, I've looked at it and it's gone now. Yeah. I just don't feel the... And she was actually a really good friend of ours then for a while with her husband while we lived down there. People think an artist wants to just sell work. You do that because you need to live. Actually, that probably will always stay with me, that moment, because it was more important. That work actually allowed somebody to let a load go from their life, and that was quite important.
Wow. I mean, how do you handle all the... Because I feel quite emotional listening to these stories. How do you handle the responsibility almost of all this? As you describe it, you're creating art as part of who you are. It's what you do, but it's who you are. And then you put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you've no idea the impact it's going to have on people's life and how it will help them heal and move on.
What people don't realise, I think, is that, especially in the type of artwork that I produce, is that actually it's quite an intellectual pursuit. So it's not, I don't just walk, you for instance, you could see a painting and think that's been done quite quickly, executed quite quickly. Actually, there's a great deal of art history that's gone into it. Mm. There's a great deal of thinking. There's a reason it's executed with that pace or simplicity. And then the next work might be completely different. It might be over complex, but it's actually an intellectual pursuit. And actually, I think I'm quite a rational person. So I don't feel as though it's my... If somebody tells me their experience or what they get from something, if people... And I would get the same when we do light shows, people applaud. I don't really get any... I don't get anything from that. And people say you should be proud of your work. I don't feel pride, really. I'm not even someone who feels jealousy that much. I'm quite rational. I hold everything quite balanced. And I guess in some ways, if we relate it to be an actor, and you have to act something that then draws emotions. So you know at some point in the film, everyone is going to cry when they watch that in the cinema. That's what it's there for. I'm quite aware when I do a project like Poppy Fields, which we hope to do here in November, and I flood the cathedral with poppies projected, and people walk through them. So not only are you walking through poppy fields, you're actually covered in red marks. So you are. It's almost like you are the soldier. Walking through the fields of your colleagues. So you see these other people in front of you with red marks on them. So there are these multiple layers that are thought through with that work. And then there's this stunning music which my composer David produces. So the two of us, we work so hard at sort of the background and what this work is about. Is I know it could expose that in other people, but it's there for that reason. Mm. And therefore... I don't think I've ever overly felt anything from somebody else's experience, if that makes sense. I don't think it weighs heavy on me.
Mm.
And I know there's quite a few professions where that's quite important that you learn that. You know, if you're a doctor, you've got to learn that. I guess if you're a priest, you've got to learn that as well. You've got to conduct and be around people who've got a lot of things going on in life that you've got to deal with. So I think it's really important as an artist and individual, actually, that we give other people that space to, and if people come and talk to us about what we do, I always think it's you have to let them talk to you because it's their moment to do that, to express themselves. I've already expressed myself and they're walking through it, they're looking at it there. Their experience for me is different to the experience for the individual.
Do people ever go the other way, make assumptions about what they know about you and your story based on your art?
Because we do a lot of work, I think next year we've got something like 30 projects. I think a lot of people now, because they see so much, think it's easy. And I think that can be an assumption. They don't realise that, you know, we probably work 12 to 16 hour days a lot of the year. And there is never a day when you're not thinking about art. Even if you're in foreign climate and you're walking around, you're going to galleries, you're looking at cathedrals, you're seeing what's going on. So I think people do make assumption. And I think what the funniest thing is, even though, you know, when I came in today, I've got a beard. It's only because I've been working so hard, I've not had a chance to. I know you don't have face-to-face meetings that often. So, you know, people, I think, assume I'm going to look like Rodin with a big beard and wear a smock. And I think a lot of people, we always laugh, a lot of people are quite disappointed when they meet me. Because, one, I'm not particularly artistic in the way I express myself. And I guess people do have an assumption of what an artist is. One of the things that we try and do, actually, and I think this is really important, is everything belongs to me when it's in the studio. The minute the doors open, it belongs to everyone else. Or it belongs to who buys it. It's theirs. So I produce a lot of artwork. But if you're one of 20,000 people who comes to a light show, for the minute you walk through it, it belongs to you. It's all yours. It's not mine. I might be the person who put it together. David might have written music, but it is not ours. It is yours. And even if it's, I always say with a sculpture or a painting, if one person loves it, that's fine, because it's not for the whole world, that art. It's for that one individual. Mm. But my favourite thing that's happened in the last few years, though, if I just digress slightly, is we went to Salisbury and we were doing some work in Salisbury and we went to the little museum in there. And I was looking at a Turner with my hands together like this. And something had been in the cathedral was rubbed off because someone presumed I was a priest. So actually, maybe it's gone the other way, that actually people are starting to think I'm more church-related now than I am artist.
Oh, that's very funny, yeah. So we are delighted to partner your new exhibition called The Leaves of the Tree. And so Leaves of the Tree, thousands of steel leaves with the word hope riven through each one to be scattered in large venues around the country. And as soon as I heard about it, I think you mentioned it, just was struck so deeply with the idea of leaves and healing with throughout the Bible. Actually, it's in the prophetic text, Ezekiel, and some of the Old Testament prophets. It's there in the Garden of Eden, the idea of the leaves of the trees. And right at the end of the Bible, Revelation 22, this image we have of where we're going, the kingdom of God. It's not going to be countryside, it's going to be a city. And at the heart of the city, there are leaves of the trees for the healing of the nations. Mm-hmm. So in my head, there was sort of like an explosion. Like, this is what our country needs right now. We're in the middle of a generational pandemic and an emergency. Where did the idea come from for this for you?
2018, we did a project called the Peace Woodland. And we used the same passage, the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations. Mm-hmm. As a way of, since we've worked together, the armistice period has been a period when we've looked to do something uplifting and progressive rather than reflective and backwards looking. So if we reflect, it's reflecting light to the future rather than looking backwards. So we did a project where I created 1,918 trees. They were about 6 foot tall, so the height of human height, outside the front of the cathedral, to represent obviously the anniversary, but also young soldiers, male and females. And it was really quite, and then we created a maze through it. And we have to remember that cathedrals, you know, people used to have services and baptisms and used to live in communities in woodlands. And cathedrals really are just beautiful forest canopies that you stand underneath. They used to be decorated with stars and, you know, the leaves are actually incorporated into the architecture all around many cathedrals. So you are almost under the sky in a cathedral, in amongst the trees, these wonderful arches are, the trees, and the, so it's all there. So we had these trees, and then we created a permanent, so it's called a living artwork, and this is actually just a small woodland, a small sort of coppice area that we then planted these 1,918 trees in. So they would grow, and the seeds will fall, and they will spread. And the idea of making an artwork then that just becomes nature is almost the opposite of being a sculptor, where you're using materials that you turn into something permanent, like copper and tin that become bronze. So moving forward, it had stayed in my head that that wasn't a finished concept. And we actually, that work was then dedicated not to just to soldiers, but to anyone who wanted to put their name to peace. And we had thousands of people who wanted to do that. So moving forward, when you know this start of this strangest year began, I think probably as soon as we're in lockdown, probably there's a few artists out there the same. I thought to myself, there will be a need to do some artwork here for myself and also one of our bigger projects. I started to paint images from my walks around nature. And just going into nature became the thing I think a lot of people started to use a lot more.
Yeah.
Just the opportunity, I've got nothing to do today except to go out of the house and walk through a woodland or a park or anywhere that people had. And I think that was really quite apparent at the start of the lockdown period. So it didn't take long for me then to look at, you know, the intellectual part I was of the arts that I was referring to earlier. I started to look at these graphs that the scientists were putting together. And it started to become apparent that actually in nature, when does nature start to shed its skin and prepare for the next year? You know, it's actually when autumn comes. And when autumn comes, we start to see the leaves fall. Actually, it's quite late summer. We start to see the leaves fall and they start to go brown. They start to drift to the floor. And there's a beauty when you're walking through nature and you just see the first leaves going. And then actually this year, because I guess there are less meetings and train journeys and time spent doing other things, that actually we've experienced, or many people, including myself, have experienced that more and more. So I imagine that quite early on, I'd say probably the end of March, early April, when there was time to think about this, it became quite apparent that that's a time I thought when it'd be quite nice to get something out there for people to look at. And then I spoke to the dean here. The word hope is a word that we have been playing around with here just as a concept, and just because it's a strange concept. It's a word with a question mark after it. And it can be used in many different ways. So that the word hope started to, just these few things together, I started to think actually what I wanted to do was to create something that linked to an emotion that I know I get when I'm walking, because my birthday's in October. And I remember kicking the leaves when I was a child on my birthday, because it's when there's lots of leaves. And even as adults, we always go for a walk on my birthday. And it's always when there's a copper coloured, the reds and the oranges, they're always there. And there's almost most, well, the leaves have gone off the trees. The trees are regenerating and storing to get through the winter to bring new life in the spring. And then it just falls into place. And I don't quite know how or when these things happen, but there's a natural organic evolution in the creation of any artwork where before you know it, you are ready to present it. And so the idea of having leaves and the way we present them is at one end of the installation, which is about 8 meters squared, we have these really rusty leaves, metal leaves. Right to in the distance, then you see a shiny steel leaf. So as you look at it, if we go back to just somebody looking at it for what it is, we have these cut out bits of metal laid on the floor, which are rusty at one end and shiny at the other. But actually, if we go back into what we've learned as individuals, what we've experienced as individuals, and this is where art, I guess, can be healing, and where art can be cathartic, and where art can expose us to things within ourselves, is the idea of having that installation is to allow us to take a moment to remember, yes, all these people have lost their life, but also for us to have a moment for us. And when you stand, if I go back to the Van Gogh that I remember seeing, that was a moment when I stood exactly where Van Gogh would have stood and looked at a painting that was as fresh to the day that he finished it, and I got something from it for that. That was mine for that moment. This priceless artwork was mine for that 30 seconds. For me, if 100,000 people go and see this installation through all the places it's going, and five people stand in front of it and they have that moment of release and they can go back to being that child kicking the leaves, seeing the hope, seeing the seeing something different is there for them, then that's what that artwork's there. And those individual leaves coming together allow us to reflect on, well, one of those is me in this much bigger society. If we think then, if we take time to think about nature, and I guess then from where you come from, within terms of the sort of the passages you were referring to before, and the title of the artwork, is we know that those leaves are going into the ground to refresh nature. And if they didn't, then there would be no spring. Mm. So if there was no regeneration, if there was no new life, if there was no new this cycle of life, this evolution within the world that happens, this continuation, this growth, this death and growth and change, etc. If there's none of that, then there is no future. So actually, everything we're going through now, the pain, the difficulties, all of these things, the artwork is not saying that. The artwork allows the individual, that's what I interpret from it, the artwork allows the individual to see that, to see it as beautiful, to see it as horrible because it's bits of metal, to whatever they see, it's for them to have that. And that for me is what my artwork is all about.
And the word hope, I wonder to what degree, I mean, it's touring around the country, isn't it? It's going, it's in Exeter at the moment, then it's off to Sheffield, Lichfield, and there's a whole roster of other venues. The hope that these venues proclaim is Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And they represent a projection of what we think the hope is. And yet in your sculpture or your art installation, as you just described it, you're offering people the chance to do what? Come and find a hope that we're already prescribing? Or is it find the hope within themselves? Or are you helping them to look internally or externally for the hope that there might be? And what do you think the hope is? Can you summarize that hope?
So it's very complex. So I think for some people, as you say, that for the church, that Christ is hope. I think for a lot of people, that remains, if I'm completely honest, that's still very complex to get there or to even understand how that can happen. There's some very difficult things within any faith, any religion, about what is at the core of it. It can be very complex. And actually, if I was to paint something just blue, it's not my job to be prescriptive about what people get from that. I've tried to express just the depth of thought that went into what it could be or what it could offer. But it can offer a whole lot of other things. As I said before, the word hope is something that could have a question mark behind it, next to it as well, or it could be something that you you use as a start of discourse. Even in the darkest times, people, even in the last moments, people find hope in life. And I think it's a word that I think society is going to use it a lot over the next 12 to 18 months. And I think it could be diluted, but I think it could be misappropriate. But I think if you individually look at what hope is for you, just take a moment to reflect on that, then I think hope is also an opportunity for maybe a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And I think it's an opportunity for, you know, hope can be, when is the next day that we can actually hug our family without it being that's an important moment. So all of those things they're not wishes, they're not desires, they're things that we hope for. Because you continually can be on that journey towards that happening without being defeated. It's actually quite a fulfilling and rich word, I think, and quite something that's beneficial to us, have at the centre of who we are.
I like this idea that you were just drawing on there about it helps you on the journey and we're going towards something, because I think often in church and in Christian circles, hope and faith is sort of weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going through difficult times,
and
it's happened to me personally, and I hear stories all the time from Christians, if they're ill or going through a difficult time, then somebody will say to them, but I thought you were a Christian, or I thought you believed in God, or where's your faith? And then the person feels even worse. That often happens in the healing ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I can start a whole healing ministry just focused on healing bad healing ministries, because so much damage has been done.
Yeah.
by taking people's faith and whacking them over the head with it when they appear to be not coping really well. And what I found moving about seeing your installation, this is hope scattered. There's something about the togetherness, that we're in this together. And when we're able to stand up and talk about our hope as faith in the journey that we're all on, mm-hmm. rather than an armor that you put on to hide it within,
yes.
then it becomes a much more healing experience. When people are able to say, well, actually, I'm finding it really tough. I've had a really bad day. I'll try again tomorrow, mm-hmm. rather than putting on a false smile. And something about it being riven through, mm-hmm. I like that word riven, there's something about it being blasted through these leaves that are on a journey as well, between being shiny and lovely into mm-hmm. being rusty. The hope remains.
Yes.
And the light can shine through that, mm-hmm. irrespective almost of what it's going through.
Sometimes changing the language of things, pick the right words that allow you to, as we were talking about before, to be on a journey with that language, rather than seeing it as definitive, finished, or even the word death. You know, death feels like, I think death is it's the end of a journey in one sense, but there is a continuation beyond death in lots of ways, which, you know, from faith there are one way of looking at it, and all faiths have different death scenarios and what's post death. But to have words that you then allow to be part of your journey, rather than things that you are defined by, that actually, I think, allows you to have a more balanced way of dealing with the thoughts that are in your head. So when you can use a word like hope, not as a finite, but as a question that you continually carry with you. But if I throw this back at you, do you see faith as a finite thing, or is it part of a journey?
I would see it as part of a relationship.
Right. Okay.
I'm in a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. My creator, therefore I'm also in a relationship with creation, because mm-hmm. I'm part of creation. And faith is both, for me, I would say, as a Christian, a gift, because it feels mysterious, but also it's a relationship that I have to work on every day, and it's a choice. Mm-hmm. So I often choose to believe things. And this is why I'm really fascinated by your use of rationality in this. And from what you've said of your process, that it's rational, and then your artwork is released and people have emotional reactions mm-hmm. to it. At what level are emotions rational? And what way can we use our emotions to learn about the world?
We should never try and suppress emotions. And actually, the emotion is core to the ability to be rational. Because I can be very emotional when I'm making artwork. So at a point it can really extract or be extruded from me into the artwork, and it might be on something that people don't even see. So for instance, I'm just making a statue of St. Chad for the cathedral, and just making the right hand in the shape of, you know, it's a blessing, but not almost not complete. I've made it so the blessing isn't complete in the hand. The hand isn't quite. It's almost moving towards, and, you know, there's emotion attached to that, because you're aware for other people who will be pilgrims coming to this place, there will be an automatic connection with that. So there are emotions that are coming out, and I was quite emotional at that point. And there are other paintings I've done where I've been almost in tears and, you know, heart wrench or related to things I've been through. Mm. But nobody ever sees that. You're in the studio by yourself, so it's... But actually, I think... where rationality comes into emotion is whatever thing you've been through, if you take a moment post that, whether it's straight away or over a period of time post that emotional period in your life, if you can reflect back on it, of the stimulus is around what created that emotion, not to try and correct it, because I love emotional people around me, actually. I really admire people who can talk about their feelings, who can express themselves, but having that rationale, and to come back and to impart that on an experience you've been through your emotions you've been through, allows you to understand yourself more. So it allows you to continue this journey. It doesn't stop you or suppress you from having emotion, but it allows you, or I know on myself, it allows me to be able to understand why I went through that, why I had that emotion. It's only in later life I realised that I was dyslexic, even though now I look at my old school books, it's quite clear, but it was just not understood when I was at school. So I look at that, and actually now, if I reflect back on how that part of who I am was affected emotionally in the past, I can actually reflect back and actually see the stimuluses around that were societal. They were the time I was living through. There were other stimuluses perhaps in there as well. But actually I can contextualize it and realize, not look back at my past and see that as pain in my past, but actually look at it as just part of, actually, I'm in a healthy place because of who I was. So that's where I talk about, we can actually understand it and understand and tell our own narratives and stories through a mix of emotional and rational responses to things.
Yeah, and it sounds deeply therapeutic. The word therapeutic was in my head as you were talking about it. And thinking about our present context, I've done a bit of work around illness and sudden life events. And one of the reasons they're difficult is that it impacts on our identity. So you've just been talking about our identity is formed by our childhood experiences, the way we think, the way we interpret lots of different things. But also our identity can be formed in how we imagine our future.
Yeah.
So that if you get a serious illness like cancer, your future is impacted and that affects your present day identity. And I think with the pandemic we're going through, so many people are suffering from mental health problems. In fact, it'd be a bit odd if you weren't, really, to be honest, on all sorts of levels. It comes out in different ways for different people. We're really struggling. And I think a lot of it is because our future has become unstable and it's affected our present day identity. We've a lot of future uncertainty, which is destabilizing people. And I wonder, just, you know, your insulation leaves the trees. I wonder to what degree that word hope, driven through these metal leaves, is helping to stabilize our future in the only way that we can right now.
So at the start of the lockdown in March, I did something which I probably haven't been able to do for a number of years. Even as an artist, you have some spreadsheets saying what your year is going to look like. Okay. So I just deleted all my Excel sheets. So my year ahead, there was nothing. So there's no income because I live off invoicing clients and people paying for artwork. There's no opportunity for anyone to come round. There is literally this blank page in front of me. And that can be quite scary. And I guess I'm quite lucky because I'm faced with that pretty much every day in the studio. I walk in and I've got a stick that I need to put some clay on, or I've got a blank canvas or a blank piece of paper, or I've got a computer screen I've got to do a light show on, or I've got to come up with an installation and I need to put that down on paper so I can put down the sort of the rationale for it, so somebody can read it and go, yeah, well, we'll get behind this because you got behind the leaves and I literally explained it to you, you know, that it didn't even exist as a physical thing to see. So every day as an artist, you look at this blank piece of paper, and I always remember going into schools, the hardest thing to teach a child is just make a mark. And as an artist, if I have nothing to do that day, or I don't want to work on what's sitting, yeah, I might have four paintings and three sculptures on the go, and I don't want to work on them. I'll just put up another easel, put a piece of paper or canvas on there, and I just make marks. Because those marks, they're never wrong. And I used to tell children, the marks are never wrong, whatever you do. And some children would screw it up and throw it away. So it doesn't matter, just make the mark. And the minute you make that mark, you've started something else. You've created something else. I guess there's a lot of artists, there's lots of people at the moment with losing jobs, there's lots of people with their life has changed significantly because of this. But I don't want to mistake in saying that, you know, in the short term there will be challenges, and in the long term there will be challenges for people. Creating a new opportunity within that is something that the blank canvas offers to you. And I think the word hope, in fact the first time we used the word hope here at Lichfield was in Holy Week. And I did a projection every night with no audience. And one night we just put the word hope up in rainbow colours, because it's what was going on. It was Monday, Thursday, I think we put it up, which was also the day people were clapping the NHS.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. And that picture, we put that picture up in a picture, thank you NHS, and it just went viral. And I've done light shows where we spent months making these light shows and they don't go viral. Just that one picture. And I think the challenge is, and even to artists, is they think that the blank canvas is a scary thing. But actually for me, the blank canvas is the most invigorating thing, because I'm not controlled by anything at that point to tell me what to do. And I think that's the freest any individual can be. And those leaves that we see now in the autumn as we walk through woods and we see nature preparing to regenerate, and an installation of some leaves that say the word hope 5,000 times, reflecting back to us the hopes of other people. I actually think the possibilities out there are things that we should probably grasp onto. But just see the world in front of us as something that we can rediscover. Yeah. And I think that to me is the hope that we can get out of what we've been through.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Peter, for chatting to us at the Go Health Podcast. I wish you all the best with the Use of the Tree exhibition. I'm really excited about it. As the timetable grows, the calendar and schedule grows for it, I really hope it makes the mark on the communities and helps people find hope and healing.
Thank you. Thanks, Julie.
You have been listening to the Go Health Podcast. Our theme music is from the song River of Life by Lofter. To continue the conversation and to find out more about the Go Health community, go to our website, gohealth.org.uk, and find us also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And there, join in the conversation, because together we flourish.